Well, I'm going to agree with Pat as I get started this morning. Pat, that is one of my favorite melodies as well. And what an important reminder as we enter a topic today that really is about our wholeness, that we're whole, that we are here to be the light of the world. First, though, I want to take a moment to just bask in appreciation. I think about what it takes for Reverend Roger, for all the team that is there, the musicians, the multimedia team, those that plan the service, and your board members, and all those who have a leadership role. And it looks like some of them have multiple roles, right? Wearing many hats. All of this, all that goes into creating an experience, not just a one once a week experience, mind you, but all the ways that they serve to keep community alive in a time where we're not all able to be in the same room together always. I mean, I just want to just extend my appreciation for how well I've been provided for. You know, in preparation for the Sundays that I'm here with you, and want you to just bask in that appreciation as well. Thank you. Well, I don't know if any of you have had the experience that I have, but the couple of times that I have walked through an IKEA store, I've just almost went into panic. And the reason is because there's so many pieces and parts. There's so many parts. When Giles and I recently relocated, we knew we needed in one of our rooms, we wanted a pull-out sofa bed. And I can't believe, hardly believe, that we actually bought one from IKEA and assembled that doggone thing ourselves. I felt very successful. And it was really an uncomplicated one compared to some of the other pieces of furniture I have seen and purchased, not necessarily at IKEA. But you know how it works, right? You're putting a gajillion parts together. You lay them all out. You read the instructions thoroughly. You go by part, step one. You do all those things, attach, screw in. All it's so easy, right? It's so easy. And then you get toward the end and like this part doesn't go with that part. And it doesn't turn out looking just like it shows you in the instruction booklet it's supposed to, you know, the frustration of that. So you unwind, right? You end up taking pieces and pieces out again until you get back to that one part that you discover you have put on upside down. Or backwards. You know what I'm saying? And no matter how many times you would do that and put a part on backwards, you will never get to the finished product that you have held in your imagination and that you see is possible, right? Well, there's something about you know, when it's upside down, it's just not going to work properly. I had the same experience with a razor once, my hand razor. I didn't realize that I had put the blade on upside down. And of course, it just doesn't work when the blade is on upside down. You know what I mean? So it got me to thinking, you know, because as a minister, as a metaphysician, frankly, you know, don't we always find meaning in the things, the little things of every day? Well, in this instance, I remember laughing when I realized my mistake with my razor. And then I thought to myself, trying to fix something that I think is broken? Well, maybe it's not broken. I mean, the razor wasn't broken, the furniture wasn't broken. I had merely assembled them upside down. Well, maybe. When I'm trying to fix something in my life, maybe it's not broken at all. Maybe it's my thinking that's upside down. Ouch. Well, Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, he said that thoughts are things. And what he meant by that they're real enough to have real effects. And what we learn is that the effects of any thoughts depend upon their emotional intensity. So feelings become important, right? A thought that is imbued with intense feeling, that has a strong emotional response attached to it, tends to be repeated. We tend to have that thought and that feeling again and again and again. You know what I mean, right? And here's what happens, though. The more I think that thought and feel that feeling attached to it, over time, that thought solidifies into a belief. So this morning, I'd like to address the predominant upside-down thought slash belief that humankind has learned to hold, especially in the Western world. The predominant upside-down thought with ancillary thoughts is this: I am only human. And religiously associated with that idea is that humanity is fundamentally broken and fallen. This is religious teaching in the world around us. You know this, right? And the thought that goes along with that is, therefore, I am powerless. And I need God to heal me. Only God can heal me. All right, again, I am only human, and humanity is fundamentally flawed, right? Fundamentally broken and fallen. I am therefore powerless, and only God can heal me. Now, most of you will probably recognize this as core religious beliefs that we have acquired that are predominant in the world around us, in the thought world around us, that were given to us from our first families, from our churches and schools when we were young, from the communities that we have lived in, sort of an infiltration of a collective consciousness. Do you know what I mean? And here's the thing, is that we know better in a unity community. We teach different than that, right? Our teaching is different. But I want us to really think about this morning, think about the insidiousness of this message, the pervasiveness of it, the collective consciousness of it, and ask ourselves, is it really just a harmless belief? Well, I think it's not just a harmless belief. Because what happens with that premise, with that belief system, is that we're set up to imagine God to be a deity, right? Which is a human-like figure that we need to fix us. I mean, if we're fundamentally broken and fallen, we need a fixer. We need a savior. When we start to view God as a fixer, we begin to interpret what happens to us either as a reward or a punishment from that fixer. God fixes us by giving us problems. Now, we don't believe that, right? But I bet there are times in all of our experience when we sort of have that thought bleed in. And it might come in different words, but it's worth examining the degree to which I am influenced by that predominant thought, the upside down thought. It plays out in our social system, right? Our policing, our justice system, our politics and governance are just riddled with rules and with practices that are based on these assumptions of belief. And we've built our world essentially around a belief that inherently something fundamentally is missing, wrong, or broken with us humans. And I'm here to just say out loud, this is totally upside down. So here's a little more just for us to ponder. I want you to be sitting hopefully in resonance with, maybe with a little discomfort around some of what I'm saying here. And if you're feeling even the least bit uncomfortable with anything I say, I want you to just be with it this morning. Just be with it. And I want you to have an inquiring mind about your own discomfort and about, you know, any quick resistance or thought of, well, that's not me. Because I just want us to have an open heart, open mind, to just understand how we're influenced by these upside down beliefs. So when we start to say that I need God to heal me, we're believing in a conditional God. Because the question starts to arise from thinking minds, from questioning minds. You know, well, who does God heal? And when? Like, we notice, don't we, that sometimes we heal, things heal, and sometimes things don't heal for a long, 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 long time. Some people heal sometimes. Some people die of the very same things that other people heal from. You know, it's as if we really think about it, that we're saying that God has preferences or favorites. You hear people say, well, let's bring out the prayer warriors. If we get enough people praying, then we'll get God's attention. Or we don't say it that way, but God will hear us and act, right? It's as if we think that God is kind of capricious that way, right? Selective, maybe even calculating, sometimes cruel. It's as if God acts like a schoolyard bully, you know, and I've got to get on his good side. And you know God's a he in this mindset. You know God's a he. And we say, if I just follow a plan that somebody tells me is God's plan for me, I'll be all right. Or if I suffer sufficiently and long enough, I was raised in the Catholic tradition and suffering is a big deal in Catholicism. Because Jesus suffered, I have to suffer, and suffering is therefore noble and righteous. That's what I learned in my childhood training. You see where I'm going with this, right? There's a lot of upside down built in to these ideas. When we think deeply enough on them, we start to get to some of the questions that arise from having those beliefs. So I think they're upside down, and I think there's a right side that we teach in Unity that is very, very important. And that is this: God is not a person, but a principle. First of all, Myrtle Fillmore herself said, God is not a person, but a principle. And she said, not a cold-hearted principle like electricity or mathematics, but the life principle, the love principle, the wisdom principle. What she was teaching is that God is principle, and that when we take hold of principle and see that God is not a deity that heals us, but listen, God is not a deity that heals. God's not a person that acts. However, God is the principle by which I heal. Do you see the subtlety in that understanding? God is the principle by which I heal. So I heal. And when do I heal? I heal when I, in a moment and to the degree that I realize the principle of wholeness. Jesus said it this way, take up your bed and walk. He wasn't claiming to heal that person. He was reminding them that the power was within them, right? In other words, I heal as I realize that I am 100% human and 100% divine. I am whole, which means I'm undivided. To heal is to claim wholeness. To heal is to claim wholeness. Now, we're very fortunate in a unity community, because we're in a kind of community where these are the truths that are nurtured here. And our teachings and all the practices that go along to support the teachings, they prove to us the pivoting power of mind, of our mind, that we are able to fully experience our humanity and all the feelings that go along with the human experience, and we advocate fully feeling our feelings. But then we also advocate pivoting our awareness to that ineffable, unseen and yet sensed and known power of us, our divine power, our divine identity. We're able to pivot toward that aspect of our beingness, our 100% divine self. And when we do that, we find we have access to principles, the principles that are life-giving. Wholeness is a principle. And we are able, therefore, to be able to change our experience, you know, when we claim wholeness as our principle. So my daughter, Alicia, who co-wrote the book, This Life Is Yours, with me, she tells a personal story to kind of illustrate this, of the pivotal nature of the mind. So she was in a traveling troupe, a musical theater troupe that went to schools all around the world to teach the arts. And she was auditioning along with 100 some other young adults right out of high school. And she got up on the stage, and she was one of the last groups to be standing on the stage. There were like, you know, 12 or something like that on the stage. And each one of them had, you know, given their auditions, and the directors behind were whispering about, you know, each of them in turn, making their final decision on who was going to make this tour, right? Who was going to be in the touring group. And Alicia had this moment of supreme doubt. She said, "I looked around, I looked from either side of me, and I thought to myself, I don't belong up here. I don't have what they have." Minutes later, they asked Alicia to sit down, and all the others went on the tour. The following year, Alicia made the tour, and she went and spoke with the director and said to the director, "I wonder what you were thinking, you know, what happened last year?" And he said to her, "You weren't ready. You didn't have confidence in yourself. We could sense it. We could feel it. You didn't believe in yourself. We believed enough in you to have you among the finalists," right? "And here you are this year, knowing your value, knowing more about what you are, what you bring." So this is a simple story to kind of just illustrate the power of mind. We can tell ourselves the story of our weakness, of our brokenness, of something wrong, something needing to be fixed, or we can experience the weakness, the physical weakness, perhaps the physical condition, and we can then pivot to our infinite nature of capacity, of spiritual capacity. And our book, This Life Is Yours, is just filled with tools for claiming wholeness, right, and practicing this pivotal power that is yours. So I want to just recap for us as we close this message. I'm going to speak to you. You are 100% human and 100% divine. This means that you are fully, you are whole, you are intact, you are fully loaded with all the spiritual software that you could ever need for your life day to day. It is not only possible, but it is preferable for you to feel your feelings, to be fully human, to experience your life and all that goes on, including your conditions. And you are fully divine, which means you can pivot to that subtler vibe of your divine identity, right? And you can then act, choose to act from that identity, claiming and employing, I would dare say, embodying the principle of wholeness and all the principles. So what do you do from here? You study principles. You study wholeness, which is divine life. You study all your spiritual powers. I understand that some of you, at least, are going to be studying divine audacity. This will teach you more about each of your amazing spiritual powers, right? Study omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience. We call them lightly the three omnis. Study the three omnis. These are all principles, divine principles that are true about you. And then devote 15 minutes minimum every day to actions, activities that emphasize wholeness, practices, spiritual practices. And what you know what we say? We say practice makes, not perfect, practice makes progress. If we want to live on the upside, on the right side upside, if we want our life to work, we want our spirituality to bear fruit, we want to claim the principle of wholeness and live in it and practice it every day. Well, let's take a few moments to meditate. And I want to meditate on spiritual power. And that is one of our powers, but it's also all power that we have as divine humans. So take a few moments with me and right where you are, settle into the way you are sitting in such a way that you're alert and yet relaxed. Being able to be still and inviting your physical body, all your systems, to slow, to function in a state of relaxation. So just notice and give messages to your nervous system to just calm and steady. Messages to your mind to quiet and listen. Messages to your heart to open, to be willing. And with your eyes closed, just enter the inner vibration of your divinity. It's pivoting from seeing ourselves as only human. It's just a pivot in our awareness to enter our infinite capacity, our hearts, minds, and full being are now present in spiritual power, where we are one with God and all that God is. Centered here in this spiritual power, we take a few moments just in the silent reverence for this great knowledge of what we are, of what we are capable of in our oneness. Be still. In the knowledge that I am fully divine, I now claim spiritual power my rightful assignment as a divine human. I affirm the truth that all that God is possible for me to know, to express, and to be in any moment of realization. And so right now, I realize spiritual power. And I affirm, and let me invite you to just either whisper out loud or silently repeat each line of this affirmation along with me. I am the commander of my mind. Like a laser beam of light that cuts through steel, I concentrate attention on what is most important right now. For all that is unfinished or uncertain, I require spiritual power. I am master of my mind and my mood. I practice self-mastery, knowing when to speak up and when to remain quiet. When I do speak, I declare what is true, what is clarifying, what is helpful. I am a demonstration of spiritual power. And so it is. And so it is. Well, friends, as you open your eyes again, I want to just close by saying it's not as if we will never, ever again have an upside-down thought. I have mine. But by means of spiritual practice, we know how to turn around. We know how to go from upside down to right side up. We can discover our power, claim our wholeness, and heal our life. We heal at the level of thought. We take up our bed and walk. So I honor and bless you for any spark of insight that maybe arises as a result of this exchange in your thoughts and feelings today, and for your courage to walk in human experience with a growing awareness of your spiritual capacities. I appreciate your presence here, and I know something about you. You are fully human, and you are fully divine. And so it is. Thank you.